Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, Thomas Brooks.
Oh, hi.
And with the power having just gone out, it's a perfect startup for a very spooky episode. To culminate maybe with a bit of lightheartedness in our discussion of pseudoscience, maybe we're going to make the argument for it today. The least harmful of the pseudosciences?
Mostly.
We're going to talk about hauntings and, I don't know, whatever else. Cryptozoology? Maybe talk
mediums?
About that a little bit. Mediums?
Ghost hunters?
So, I don't know. Well, thinking about if we're including mediums, maybe it's not the least harmful.
Yeah, no, I was going through and I was like, okay, where is the iffy stuff here? Because, like, I think over this last episode, I've been a very charitable person when it comes to these pseudoscientific endeavors. For the most part, like, I always try to find, always, at least it was my goal to find the least sensational version of whatever we were talking about. And with this one, I was like, okay, like, ghost hunters is fun, but, like, is there, like, some sort of dark underbelly to this? Like, where's the grift? What's wrong with this area? And I think mediums, like, they're top of the list.
Yeah. What's her name? The famous medium from, like, the 80s who, like, got busted so many times for, like, claiming that, like, people had died and, like, they find the kidnapped victim, like, a year later and, like, potentially called off part of the search because, like, they accepted the medium at face value. There are a number of them that kind of fit that category, though, and boy, do they make their money.
Yeah, they do. Let's see. Is it Sylvia Brown?
It is Sylvia Brown. That is exactly who I'm thinking of. There are whole compilations out there of Sylvia Brown getting it wrong. And it's just amazing that she was hired by so many, like, police departments and, like, agencies and, like, but it's kind of like the same thing we've talked about with other stuff. Like, there are, like, grieving parents or, like, someone's in this situation and no one can seem to help. So you turn to Sylvia Brown.
Who are you going to call? Sylvia.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. So
I will say the interesting thing about, like, this topic, and with, in particular, mediums, and I think I've talked about this a little bit, like, earlier in the podcast when we were doing, like, maybe it was hypnosis. I can't remember which topic it was. But, like, the psychical societies or those that are interested in hauntings or, like, parapsychology in general, there's a very, very long history that goes back to the origins of these societies having a vested interest in debunking mediums.
Like, even they hate the mediums.
Yes. So when we talk about, like, ghost hunters or, like, paranormal investigators or parapsychologists, like, there's always, like, this little, like, undercurrent of, like, yeah, we're going to study this haunting, but also if we can, like, shit on mediums, we're going to do it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I found, like, when delving into some of, like, the cryptozoology and, like, the ghost hunting, like, realms, especially, like, when we're looking at, like, the UFO enthusiasts, which was a really interesting group to look at, is that, like, a lot of them do want to come across, like, there is this whole subset of them that, like, want to do it legit.
Mm-hmm.
They want to study the possibility of, let's say, some cryptozoological creature, but, like, really to ask the question of, like, what could this have actually been, right? Like, we're not saying that there's a Bigfoot out there, but what's, like, the realistic explanation for it? We're not saying that that's an alien spacecraft. What's the realistic? Is it a drone? Is it some unmanned experimental government spacecraft? And there's this subset of them that are very open to, like, keeping it grounded in the actual science or in the, like, the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothesize, investigate, try to come up with a legitimate answer. And then there's the other side that's like, oh no, it's all aliens, or, like, there's definitely a Mothman, or I saw a ghost, you know, I've definitely had these haunting experiences. And there's a lot of people in between who have had weird experiences, seen weird things out in the woods, come across some odd thing that they couldn't explain, saw something in the sky. They can't explain it. They want to explain it as best as possible, but they just don't have an answer. But like, mediums still exist kind of outside of that, because they're starting with the premise that they could speak to the dead,
right?
Or that they can like predict the future, mm-hmm. or like sense things. And there's just so much evidence. I mean, I guess because people are like motivated to debunk them, there's just so much evidence out there, like debunking those, like, who's the guy that, all right, I'm just gonna jump back into this. Yeah, it should definitely not, you know, talk smack about like speaking with the dead mediums. So I'm done on that. They shut my power out twice. They're
out to get you.
They're out to get me. It must be the ghosts and not the major lightning storm rolling through our area.
It's weird that you're getting power outages and not me, because I live like out in a field.
Things are just weird here. And again, like, that's, I mean, part of, like, we can like use this to lead into some of our ghost talk, is that like, I'm in an old house. I don't have like a 200 amp breaker, which is standard. And I have a pretty big house. And so I've got old tech that's running a bunch of stuff, and it's happening when the lightning strikes. Cause like, everything flickers off, and then there's like, and it's obviously the lightning striking far away, but it must be where it's striking is kind of affecting the area. And so, yeah, it has an effect every time this happens. Every time a storm like this rolls through, we're prone to it. And again, I could say it's ghosts, because it was like coincidence that we're talking about mediums. And but the reality is, it's like 75 year old infrastructure in town, that just is kind of unreliable when it's a lot of lightning going on outside.
And that was, speaking of, that was one explanation I was reading about the Victorians' interest in ghosts, that like they were now exposed to like extreme like technological progress in a way that like, because like electricity was getting put into homes, and like radio is a little bit later than Victorians, but you were having these advances that were causing weird things to happen in the house that people weren't used to, including flickering lights and smells and stuff like that. That probably ramped up some of the like superstitious beliefs, as well as this idea that like, with voice recordings and photographs, you had this like undead aspect of the deceased now, where like beforehand you just had like portraits or their writings or things like that, but now you could have like a photograph of someone who was alive that is hyper real. And so there's also this element of like the dead being more present and existing outside of just memory, that made people much more interested in the paranormal in that way.
I mean, in the same way that like a lot of really old horror stories dealt with like portraits, paintings, in the same way we would look at pictures. But like very rarely are we like writing with the dead, or but like, yeah. And then as technology advances, we start seeing it come through like the radio and audio messages and yeah, a paranormal. Like,
oh, I was about to say, or like all the dead people on Facebook now.
Yeah, and like literal, like in this case, yeah. And a lot of weird backlash, because Twitter's apparently gonna drop all like accounts that have been inactive. YouTube, all accounts that have been inactive for like 2 years. And it's like people are like, well, you know, this like digital archive of all my like dead friends' memories is gonna be gone now. Or like you could save it all. And then like if this again, like this like hyper real interaction with it, it's kind of creepy.
It is kind of creepy. I did find that the first like society to emerge for the psychical or the paranormal was the Society for the Psychical Research, SPR, in London in 1882. And it was primarily like pre-parapsychology, pre-ghost hunters, like anything that you could think of that's like what we have today, it kind of originates from there. The originator, Harry Price, was a very big name in terms of like conjuring and stage magic and stuff like that. He was friends with Houdini, and like Houdini, he was very interested in debunking mediums. But of interesting note, one of the original members of the Society for Psychical Research was the very own William James.
Cool.
Uh-huh. And so they worked primarily with like, oh, this place is haunted, or this medium claims that she can talk to ghosts, or is telepathy a thing? And so, like you were saying with the UFO people, they took a very like grounded materialist view of the paranormal. So they looked to like explain what could be happening. Not necessarily like it's the demons, right? But like,
right,
if humans can use telepathy, how might that situate itself within, say, like an evolutionary framework? What are the mechanisms of this? And then because it was the 1800s, and I guess we'll talk about this next year in more depth, but very like physio oriented. Mm-hmm. Research that then like inferred psychological processes.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me that we have this situation where, you know, you have a group of thinkers trying to like figure it out or debunk it. It reminds me of you know, on one hand you've got like you know, like the portrayal of like the kind of like exorcists, you know, in the movies, but also like that group within the Vatican, because there's like a group within the Vatican that goes out and investigates potential miracles and claims. So if someone's like, hey, this statue is crying, and it's a miracle, like the statue of the Virgin Mary is crying, like people are coming around to see it, and so they'll send people out to be like, all right, can we explain this? Or is this something fantastical? Like, is this something beyond our ability to understand, which we can then kind of put into the realm of supernatural? We can put into the realm of this is a miracle. The one thing they did find was the crying statue was like a leaky sewage pipe, which not really good for the people who are like, give me the tears and I'll like rub them on my face. But there are examples like that. If someone claims to be like demon possessed or something like that, like there's the grifter exorcists out there, who all have YouTube channels. They're kind of interesting to watch. But there's also like this kind of legitimate, like, all right, like if this person's making a claim, if this thing is happening, let's go and basically debunk it. And if we can't debunk it, then we can start getting into the realm of like, all right, something's going on here. But it's also not that surprising. I mean, anyone who's ever seen the beginning of Ghostbusters, that the Peter Venkman, Bill Murray's character, is doing that like shock test. Like, it's not that surprising to find that a bunch of psychologists were doing in New York, right? Like,
London, but yeah.
No, in this case, like for Bill Murray, yeah. Like I would believe.
Oh, and Bill, yeah.
Yeah, I would believe, yeah, if they're like, but they're at, yeah, like NYU or something like that, you know, shocking people. You know, when they get the question, when they get the card wrong. In this case, the guy was getting all the cards right. It's kind of like a funny bit at the beginning. But like, no, I could see, I would do that psych study. I don't think they'd let me shock people, but.
Right, yeah, probably not the shocking, but
we could test psychical ability.
So I did I scrolled down to their list of presidents for the Psychical Society, and William James was not only an early member,
ooh,
he was also the president
from 1894 to
95. Yeah. I want to join the Psychical Society.
They're still around.
I figured they are. All right. That's my next grant. I'm going to get funding to join the Psychical Society.
Let's see. They have an event coming up on May 22nd via Zoom. Ooh. By Dr. Helene Wabe. The Eons Channeling Research Program, exploring our capacity to know and affect beyond the traditional five senses.
Cool.
From the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Is that our Noetics Research Lab? It sounds fancy, but it kind of does get us into the realm of some like pseudosciencey stuff. Like,
yeah,
like, even if you're trying to ground this within the reality, like the basic concepts of a lot of this stuff exists so far outside of that reality that it's kind of a hard sell in a modern science era.
Mm-hmm. I mean, depends on who you're selling it to, right? Like,
that's true. It's a hard sell amongst other scientists.
Yes, it is a hard sell there. But I was looking at, let's see, the Daily Mail published in 2019 data from, where did they get it from? Pew Research, and let's see, the IBIS World Industry Report. For the psychic industry. And in 2019, the whole industry is worth $2.2 billion.
That's not surprising. And like, they're not asking for like huge amounts of money either.
Mm-mm.
Like, you can go get your palm read for pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually the number one category. So they looked at the different categories of psychic practices. And palm reading accounts for 23%. Tarot readers are 21%. Mediums are 18%. Aura readers are 15%. Astrology is 12%. And then other is 11%.
I didn't even think about aura readers. I'd probably like go see a medium before I went and saw someone who would read my aura.
Right. I'm just going to stick with tarot cards. I would like to go get my palm read. I think that's like interesting, but not like, I was pleasantly surprised to find that like palm readers and tarot cards together are 44% of the like market. And it's primarily focused on like personal development and like individual spirituality and stuff. Whereas like the actual talking to dead people was only 18%. So that was, a positive for me.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's like changing. Like, I wonder if, like, again, we're maybe moving away. Like, if you have the ability to obtain more of those memories through, like, you know, a dead social media account, lots of pictures, it's video, so much more accessible than it used to be. Are we seeing like a decline in that? Like, I want to speak beyond. Because like you have ways to interact with the dead that we never had before, or that we were very limited or very they were out of the range of the average person. So you had to be wealthy to have some of this stuff. I mean, even like in the 80s and 90s, like having a personal camcorder, it's like eons, you know, beyond where we are like today, like what you needed for that kind of money. And now it's like, nah. I've got a phone. You know, I got it for free with my plan. So it does everything. But maybe that's why we're seeing.
Do you want to guess what?
No.
Oh, yeah. The decline in the mediumship is that we, yeah. I follow. Sorry.
No, I was just saying, what were you saying?
Oh, I was going to guess. They have the per capita income estimates. For an individual in the psychic industry?
More money than I make.
Nope.
No.
Well, I mean, this is the projection for like the average. So
yeah.
Like,
okay.
You know, the Long Island medium is going to be making more than you do.
Obviously. I I don't know. I mean, it does seem like, again, it's a niche thing. Like if you're doing tarot, like it's niche. You're probably not going to have back to back to back to back to back people. You've probably got to like actually work it a little bit. Like you have to market yourself. So I don't know, maybe 30,000 a year.
Current estimates are 47.
Ooh, I was way under. Lowballed them. Okay.
Yeah,
Cool.
that's higher than I thought it would be. And what's even more depressing is that there are like professor positions that
Oh,
are lower than that.
yeah, I got offered one that was 44, and I was adjuncting at 45 at the time. Full-time adjuncting for more than or about the same as I would have been making. Yeah, no, I can't. Oof.
If you had picked up tarot reading, you could have been making
The
along with your
same.
adjuncting.
See, along with that, but like, there's a time thing. Like, I'm guessing these people are doing it, you know.
Right. Like I imagine the people that sit out on the square in New Orleans probably sit there for 8 hours a day.
Yeah. Well, and also like how much of that's being reported? So like this is like I would argue this is the legit.
That's
Like
fair.
I've got an LLC and I'm filing my taxes every year, tarot.
Not
This
pay me
isn't
cash on the
yeah.
side of the street, tarot.
Now, and that person might be making the same, which cool, but they're making it
Right. Well, I mean,
tax free.
I ran the numbers with a friend because he paid $25 for like a 5 minute reading,
Oh
tarot
yeah, good
reading down
Lord.
in the Keys. And the dude had a lot of people lined up for a reading. And so we were like, okay, if he does like 5 readings a day, or no, it was like if he does 20 readings a day for 5 minutes, right? Like, that's
Yeah.
like no time at all, but you pull in $25 for those 20. You do that 5 days a week for a whole year, you're making like close to $100,000 a
Yeah.
year.
Yeah. So,
All in cash.
I don't know what I'm doing with my retirement.
All right. We're moving to the Keys and reading tarot. Or we'll do it in New Orleans, because I feel like you'd probably be just as successful there. And then you could just take what are they, hurricanes?
Yeah, you just leave for the hurricane season. Well, you do like 6 months in Santa Fe. Like,
Oh
have a little
yeah.
like esoteric bookshop, like a cult shop, and then 6 months in New Orleans.
That sounds fabulous. What am I doing?
I know, right?
I would totally do that.
Oh. No, it's interesting. And I mean like again, like there's a capital market for it. It's not going anywhere.
Nope.
And maybe if we're seeing a decline in mediumship, but like an increase in that kind of like personal development, maybe give me some hope, placebo tarot reading. Cool.
Yeah.
I would view
Whatever.
that as relative. Like, I mean, again, it comes down to like the person whose hands it's in as potentially relatively harmless. I'm sure if you wanted to be malicious, you could spread some terrible information and like mess with people if you were reading their tarot.
Right. Yeah, and I think the mediumship in particular is just kind of gross to me, 'cause like that is like, I don't know, I can't really think of it in any other way except a grift.
It's an exploitation of people's grief.
Yeah,
Like
like
it's worse. I mean, but that's like a lot of the stuff we've talked about is it's an exploitation of
Yeah.
someone's like desperation. And you know, you're desperate to lose weight, so you go on the carnivore diet. You're desperate to get this cure, so you consume turpentine. In this case, you're desperate to connect with a loved one that you lost. And so which is again very different than what we would see in like the Ghost Hunters, which are just sort of like which are they're almost like a historical aspect. They're just kind of like it's a show, it's entertainment.
Right. And ghost hunting has been, well, it's been around for a long time. It didn't really kick off until the early 2000s with Ghost Hunter, obviously.
Yeah.
The widely successful sci-fi show, which then like spawned massive increases in like ghost tours. Like those
Yeah.
are a relatively new phenomena for town touristy stuff to have, as well as the whole industry around like the little gadgets they use for like, you know, looking at UV rays and like radio waves and all of that fun stuff. And so that, well, that stuff existed beforehand. It really wasn't ever like packaged as ghost hunting equipment until the Ghost Hunter and similar TV shows in the 2000s really took off, and people were like, "Ooh, this is cool. Look at all this cheap equipment. We can go, you know, have our own little ghost adventure in our small town."
Yeah. We were talking about, like, for our third anniversary playing Minecraft, there's a game called is it Phasmagoria? It's not fantastic. Like, there's another game that's that, but it's a ghost hunting game. It's a multiplayer ghost hunting game where you play a team and you have to figure out like what kind of spirit is in the house. You then have all the tools, and like different tools work for different spirits. And if you can like check all the boxes and answer the questions, but also like the thing's trying to kill you.
Uh-huh.
Like if you mess with it. So maybe we add that to our list.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I'm down.
And it's four players, so we can ask some of our colleagues to join us.
Yeah. I can think of a couple who would love to.
Yeah. So like that is interesting that like, I mean, like the idea of ghost hunting, or like the idea of like an interesting ghost, isn't new, but like the modern conceptualization of the ghost hunt is very new. And so how would that like tie into like, I guess would that also tie into things like the popularity of like the Ouija board and like the seance? I know that isn't new either. Like that has a long history, mm-hmm. but like, how does that sort of tie into this? I don't know if you know any of that.
So the Ouija boards and the seances are like Victorian creations. Now the Ouija board's really interesting. So I'll do the seance first. The seances were like social events that mm-hmm. people would go to. They were kind of like the middle class, upper middle class like thing to do. Like you go to somebody's house party and you would do a seance together, and it would be good fun. Sometimes you would hire a spirit medium to come in and do the seance. Now the thing with the seances, and this is probably one of the best books I read this year, is Revelations of a Spirit Medium. That was published in 1891, which then inspired Harry Houdini to go on his like anti-medium like busting tour.
Yeah.
Is that there was at the time, and particularly in the United States, a network of mediums that all communicated together and kept these massive like directories at like a head medium's house mm-hmm. in each city, like major city. And so as you would travel as a medium across the country, likely by rail, you'd stop in these different towns, you get hired out to do seances. And before you do the seance, you go to like the head medium, who would have like pictures of like, they'd have the guest list, they'd have pictures of all their deceased relatives, they'd have notes on what other mediums like told those people at previous seance parties, and like what the medium told them that they resonated with, so you can repeat those things. They would give them some, like, as stealthy as you could in that age, some stealthy photography and note-taking equipment. So when you did go into somebody's house, you could like take pictures of the walls of family members. You could like make quick copies of like personal letters and stuff like that to add to that archive. Cool. That the head medium would take. And so it was kind of like a transcontinental rift of mediumships and seances. But it wasn't necessarily like as solemn an experience as like, say, mediumship as we think of today, where it's like very personal and tied to grief. And like, it was mostly just a, look at what this person can do. We're talking to a dead person. Ah, ha, ha, ha. What great fun.
It was entertainment. It was like pre-television entertainment.
And so it was that, and then similarly with the Ouija boards, which is actually Ouija, which is
Ouija.
Yes, in French and German.
You know, I never put that together. And I guess that makes a lot of sense.
So it's Ouija board. Total parlor game, not serious, existed for several decades before the satanic panic, before like parents freaked out about Satan lurking behind every doorway and like Ouija boards opening portals to hell. And so very like low key, everybody was doing it. You had a Ouija board at the house for when you had guests over. And if you needed something to do and were tired of playing cards, you would pull out your Ouija board.
Makes me remember, I had a friend who had the pleasure of joining me for a catechism class when I think it was in eighth grade at the time. And they went on, the catechism teacher went on a rant about like magic eight balls and Ouija boards and stuff like that. And he was just like, I'm never coming with you to one of these things again. he's like, I like my magic eight ball and my Ouija board.
I still haven't played with one. I
made a table out of one. We could,
yeah,
just pull the table aside. It's very Victorian looking. We could just pull the table aside. I think I've got the eye somewhere. So,
oh, the planchette.
Yeah. So I've got that somewhere. But I mean, you know, maybe that could be, because we were thinking about like ideas for like what we're gonna do for a couple of weeks, and maybe we like we're hoping to go and like camp out at some haunted places. Maybe we just do a full podcast episode from there.
With different
ghost hunting equipment.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So
I would say, and this kind of, I don't know, to kind of put some sort of bow on this, I think that like the ghost hunting and the ghost tours and stuff like that, definitely a tourism capitalist motivation here that kind of is not exactly a grift, but it is like, you got to keep the ghosts alive so that way people go on the like New Orleans ghost tour.
Right.
And I mean, so yeah. Like, I see a very touristy thing, and this is something that you've talked about quite a bit with our folklore research.
Yeah, I am really interested. And again, I don't really know where the research lies, because I don't know if it's been collected. I'm sure other people have had the idea and other people have put the pieces together, and maybe it exists in like anthropology, sociology circles, and psych, it doesn't really have its place. This idea of like, why do we have these stories? And so how do these ghosts appear? And I think they start out of some, and we've kind of talked about this in some of the presentations that we've given over the last year or so, like some of these start with the idea of like trying to explain bad shit that happens in the environment. So woman drowns her kids in the river. She must have been possessed, or it must be La Llorona. We've got something that's like killing cattle or it must be aliens, not like, you know, someone. We don't want to think it's someone from the town. And so maybe it starts like that. I think like Mothman's a good example. So like really shoddy bridge design and like cutting corners means this bridge collapses. People reported maybe seeing this sort of figure with red eyes, and it kind of evolves into Mothman. And so, okay. So like, we're trying to explain these terrible disasters, and Mothman becomes like this harbinger for doom. So it's a warning. And there's a lot of like creatures or beings, angels, all sorts of stuff that represent harbingers of doom. Because like, hey, we just can't like, it can't be like complete malfeasance. It can't be happenstance. We don't want to, That's good. It's all terror management theory. We're trying to manage the terror of like this stuff could happen to anyone. I'm like, well, it doesn't. It only happens in these situations, or it only happens if you like break the rules of the community. But over time, like especially in kind of our late stage capitalist world where the community is less connected, why do we still have ghosts? Like, because these stories are being told, but like the average person doesn't really buy it, do they? Maybe. But like, I think what we're kind of wanting to look at is what if they do? Like, there is a benefit to the local hotel being haunted. It's something fun to talk about. It's exciting for visitors to know that like there might be a ghost down the hall. Like, the ghost doesn't come to my room. I'm in a safe room. But like, and then we don't rent this room out because the ghost is there. Or maybe you can rent the room out for an extra fee.
Right.
And so there's this like extra stuff. The hotel where like The Shining was filmed is like become a huge tourist destination. And like again, like, is it haunted? Does it actually have a haunt, like a history? It doesn't matter at this point. It you know, everyone's gonna kind of like build it up because like that brings people in, or that's one of the reasons that people come in. And it's fascinating. And again, it's like the early seance. It's fun.
Right.
To an extent. It's a way to kind of like, it's kind of like a modern tourist trap. It's not the giant ball of yarn, it's the ghost. And maybe something weird happens. You know, it's an old hotel, it creaks. I don't know if you've ever stayed, if you've ever stayed a night in the Plaza Hotel in town.
I haven't, but I've been. Oh man.
It was like staying in a hotel. But it's an old hotel. So like creaks, and there's just, you know, sometimes the pipes are a little,
right.
A little iffy. Sometimes other stuff happens. Like the electricity might not be up to code anymore. So there's a little flicker, like stuff happens. But yeah, it sticks around because yeah, it makes money. Keeps people coming. You know, do you want to stay at the Motel 6 down the road, or do you want to stay at the Plaza?
Right, maybe you'll see the ghost. Ooh.
Yeah,
I mean, they even named the bar at the Plaza after the ghost.
But you have to appease the ghost, right?
Right.
But yeah, like, and that further kind of builds that connection. And if you work there, again, whether you believe it or not, like, it's in your benefit as an employer, as an employee, as someone whose livelihood now depends on people coming into this old hotel. It depends on kind of keeping that story alive, but like that doesn't hurt me ultimately.
Right. Or if it does, it's more minimal than most things that we've talked about.
Yeah. I mean, there are some people who kind of become obsessed with it, or like they become obsessed with certain cryptids, creatures, things like that. But like the concept in itself is I think more fun for your average person,
right,
than it is like a formation of like existential terror. Maybe a way to explain some of that existential terror, or to, and like I think we like ghost stories too because like it gives us some sense that there is something next. It's kind of like we spent the whole last summer talking about like the decline of religion. And like why we're seeing these issues and like belief and ritual. And like maybe we're seeing this like, you know, there's a perfect like trade-off around the Victorian era. We're seeing a higher degree of like interest in ghosts and spirits and these stories of like people coming back from beyond the grave. And like that ties into that we want some sense of knowing what happens next, because it's uncertain. It's all terror management theory.
All that to say is capitalism and terror management theory.
And Yoon.
And Yoon.
We have to go back to Yoon. Like,
we'll throw it back in. This is the last episode of the season.
We haven't talked to Yoon enough. So yeah, cool. I mean, yeah.
I find it, with the exception of the mediums, I think it's all very benign.
Yeah, I mean, even like the cryptozoology subreddit's pretty laid back. There's like fan art. I think serious like cryptid subreddits. But it's the same with like the UFO subreddits. Like there's like UAP, there's UFO, there's a couple of others with like UFO believers, and they're very different in what they what they focus on, what they allow. Some are more laid back, some are more sciencey rigid, some are more like, is this an alien? And some are just full of people who are like, this is dumb. Why can't you post good footage? This is obviously a balloon. Like, yeah, like some are far more skeptical and cynical, and some are far more open. But I think like everyone gets something from it.
Right. And I find that with the haunted house subreddits that I follow, or like, is this a ghost subreddits, is they're actually like hyper responsible in that. Generally, the first comment and the top comment is always get out of the house and check your gas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's always the first one. You need to call somebody now to make sure you don't have a gas leak. And like, you know,
yeah,
sometimes it's not. Sometimes somebody's just scared and they're hallucinating or like misinterpreting stimuli in their environment. But like, it's always good to like preface ahead of time. If you think the house is haunted, make sure there's not a gas leak.
That's going to be our title for the episode. If you think the house is haunted, check for gas leaks. That'll probably be something bashing mediums. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's cool. I mean, I'm fascinated with it. I don't think I can research it, but like, I think we found niches that we can, or ways that we can research this in terms of like how the community uses these stories. I'll shout out my favorite podcast that they recently did an episode with actual recordings from a haunted Alexa.
Oh, nice.
Which they got after their mom passed away, which is a really interesting twist. So like the spirit's still there, but it's like now communicating through like their echo or something. It's the Chilluminati. So they're on like 150 something episodes nowadays. No, they I think they just hit 200. They're pretty up there, but they do all sorts of stuff. They do true crime, they do a bunch on the JFK assassination, like all the conspiracy theories behind that, but they do a lot of like haunting cryptozoology stuff. Really cool. And like, I think one of them takes it kind of seriously, but you know, I mean, it's more about like, hey, this stuff's interesting, it's fascinating. They do some history stuff every now and then, some actual like, hey, there's some real stuff here. But yeah. So I guess we'll end. Cool. Do you have a Ask Psychology question of the week? There's a question here that I think we have talked about before. What's the P factor of psychopathology? But I think that one's too easy.
The P factor?
I guess like a dark triad, like I think that's kind of what they're referring to is like that D factor, like that big, like overarching factor of that.
That like ties all.
Yeah.
The whole DSM together.
Well, in this case, I'll ask that one. So this one's from 14 hours ago. So what exactly is the P factor of psychopathology? How is it measured? How does it relate to the hierarchical taxonomy of psychopathology? And has some empirical backing. Oh, I know it relates to the hierarchical taxonomy of psychopathology and has some empirical backing for it, but I'm not entirely sure what it is, how it's measured, and how these measurements correlate with mental disorder diagnoses and specific life outcomes. Can someone please help me out? And I think they're kind of looking at like that big intelligence, like kind of like that intelligence factor. So there's this like big intelligence, and then there's all these like sub intelligences. But in this case, looking at it in terms of psychopathology, which I guess is kind of related to what we had, I think we had talked about this with Dark Triad, that there's like a psychopathy, like psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and narcissism kind of all sit under this umbrella of Dark Triad D factor, whatever it may be. But in this case, is there some psychopathology P factor that kind of like, maybe it's proneness to psychopathology. I don't know.
I have no idea.
No idea.
no idea. Well, I'm like, what would tie things together like OCD, depression, borderline, and substance abuse? And I'm like, maybe the one thing is like, it's a, maybe it's like the P factor is disorder, right? Like disorder in that, like your life is no longer orderly, like, or you can't live up to the expectations that you have, other people have, and society has of you as like an upstanding heterosexual capitalist citizen. And so like this disorder element is like what underlies all of these things, is it disrupts that like ideal American citizenry.
Yeah, there are only two answers, and one's just sort of like, yeah, what is it? It's a good critique. Like, it's why we probably don't actually have one, is because like, how do you define what underlies like every psychopathology, just like whatever, every disorder? And the other person says that like it could represent like general distress and functionality, like
which, yeah,
or says that,
yeah, dysfunction is probably a better word for that.
Yeah, they did edit that, or it could merely represent those things that we refer to as psychopathology that like kind of generally move together. So like, yeah, distress, it's non-normative. So like your example of it, like it disrupts you being the kind of basic American. So like it disrupts your ability to work, to live a normal life, to hold relationships, whatever we deem is normative. In our culture, if it disrupts that, then yes, it's psychopathology, because it's a disordered state of the psyche. But like, I don't know, I've never, like, that was kind of like, because at first I thought they were talking about it from like psychopathy, and it was like a dark triad thing, and I was like, oh, and then I was like, no, they're talking about like psychopathology in general. So it seems broad, because like psychopathology in general is such a broad swath of different things. So
I would say it's probably the disorder, but honestly, the APA is such a, and the DSM, like we've talked about the DSM before, like it's a hot mess. And it is very, very sensitive to cultural whims. And so, like, I do this activity in my personality class where we look at like personality disorders, and I like have them pick and justify a personality disorder that's going to leave the DSM in the next 20 years, and then create a personality disorder that will emerge in the DSM in 20 years, right? Because it's so flexible. Like, and the cop out for this is histrionic goes away, and Machiavellian personality disorder enters.
Yeah, okay.
And so, like, and sure, people will do research and studies and et cetera, but, like, ultimately, like, because of the way the DSM is organized and written, like, it's way more flexible than people think it is, and it's not necessarily organized under a single factor.
Right, right. Like, and I think that's why, like, you can maybe take this to a smaller level and say, like, mood disorders might have, like, an M factor. Anxiety disorders have an A factor for anxiety. Like, there are these commonalities that tie similar disorders together, but there's not, right. but even then, like, there's such a wide swath between like mania and depression, but bipolar has the depression at least. So like depressive symptoms tend to be a kind of commonality amongst most mood disorders. So yeah.
And like, but with the personality disorders, at least they have the decency to cluster them for us.
Yeah. So the personality disorders are in their own group. They're in their own category. And so like, they probably have like a P factor for personality disorders, that they're very pervasive, that they have these kind of ingrained traits. But like all the other disorders are lumped in the other category. And so like, again, how do you what's the commonality between major depressive disorder and schizophrenia, like, that links them together, or substance abuse disorder, or
conduct disorder,
right? Sure. Which, like, there might be something in, like, the disorder itself, or the disordered behavior, or the distressing aspect, but also you get to something like antisocial, and, like, how distressed are they when they don't care what you think about them?
Right.
They feel so good about themselves. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So, on that note, any doom and gloom to cap us off, or like, ghosts are mostly harmless?
I don't know. Like, I think the only doom and gloom is that we're wrapping this season and no more pseudoscience for a while.
I mean, we could talk about pseudoscience anytime, right?
We can, but this is the cap at the end of a semester.
Yeah, so we're going to pick up in the next couple of episodes of doing some recaps from some of our RMPA episodes, maybe doing some follow-up interviews if we can get in touch with some people. And then we've got to figure out what to do before we launch into the fall, and that's that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work, but it'll be fun. And so, on that note, so the only doom and gloom is that we're ending for the season.
Huzzah!
So, on that note, goodbye.
Bye.